Welcome to the Midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland, once again in our Buck studio, which usually spells live music for a midday. And today, it's a delight to have Elisa Jordheim with her accompanist at the fortepiano, Trevor Stevenson. And Elisa, recently, you may have seen her perform Mahler's Fourth with the Madison Symphony, or perhaps Messiah with Madison Bach musicians. And I imagine you have had some other performances in there, too. But welcome first to the Midday, Elisa.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what else have you been singing recently?
Oh, goodness. Well, I have a lot coming up. Probably the most exciting for me is with the Grant Park Music Festival in Chicago. I'm singing Torkey's Book of Proverbs. And my father is a saxophonist, and Michael Torkey has written quite a bit of music for the saxophone. And there's some saxophones in that piece, so I'm really looking forward to performing that.
That's different. So that'll be outdoors, too, then?
Yes, at Millennium
with saxophones.
Park.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. So that'll be a chance. Do you do a lot of outdoor performing?
You know, not really. But it's always an interesting experience. You never know what's going to be flying around. I sang at the Caramore International Music Festival last summer, and that was outdoors, but under a tent. And the acoustic under that tent was actually quite nice.
Really?
So, yeah.
I'm acquainted with a bass player who had played an outdoor concert with the Madison Symphony some years ago, and was seeing notes that he wasn't familiar with in the score, and then they flew away.
Oh. Oh,
yes, it has its excitements at this time of year.
Yes.
And when is that performance at Grant Park?
That's June 17th and 18th, two performances.
All right. Well, coming soon enough, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, you have a nice program for us today, if I may say so. And the Germans will be very well represented, but they won't have the whole show.
Right.
And you're going to start with something from The Marriage of Figaro.
Yeah, I'm going to be singing De Vieni Non Tardar, which is sung by Susanna in the fourth act of the opera. It's kind of a long synopsis, so I won't go into all of it. But at this point in the story, Susanna and her employer, the Countess, have decided to trick their men. So they have switched their clothing. So Susanna is posing as the Countess in this aria. And it's interesting musically because the aria is very lyrical and sort of resembles the Countess's arias earlier on in the opera. So Figaro, Susanna's recent husband, is hiding in a bush nearby, and he doesn't know that she knows that he's there, if that makes sense. So she's singing, knowing that he's listening, and singing about love and singing about her lover to come to her. So it's a really beautiful respite, I think, from all of the craziness that ensues in Act 4.
Would it make it easier for you if we have somebody hide in a bush while you sing?
Oh, well, you know, you're welcome to be Figaro for me.
If you can find one.
Yes. Okay. Well, we'll hold that thought and do it with what we have to work with, which is more than ample.
Sure, yes. Thank you.
From The Marriage of Figaro, and our performer today, Elisa Jordheim, with Trevor Stevenson at the fortepiano, and, well, a gorgeous song.
And absolutely. And it's very interesting to have the chance to sing it with a forte piano. And the pitch is actually a quarter step lower than the modern piano. So when we first got together to rehearse, I thought, oh, this feels a little lower than what I'm used to.
But it sounds beautiful lower.
Well, yeah. And I think the
silky,
color.
Yeah,
and the color of the instrument is so special and lovely and fits the piece really beautifully.
And you've sung this role in the opera?
I actually have not. Lengthy scenes from it, but I've actually sung Barbarina, her Susanna's cousin, coming up on three times this fall.
So how does it compare doing it as a recital piece versus doing it on stage? I mean, do you feel at all limited by not being able to move around when you sing an aria?
Well, you know, I feel like even in a recital setting, I still feel pretty free to move about the stage, just as long as I don't get too far away from my collaborator.
Yeah, and we have a microphone here, too, which limits you a little more.
Yeah, so I think it's just sort of like a stiller version than what it would be in a staged production. But this piece, by nature, is pretty still. So I do a lot with my eyes and my focus. So,
interesting.
So I think it works well on a recital and also in the context of the show as well.
I would say so. And the fortepiano is not out of keeping with what you would have heard late in Mozart's life.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And of course, they would have rehearsed with the fortepiano for the first several weeks of staging an opera. That's what they use. We know they did, yeah. And then the orchestra comes in the last couple of days, just like it does today.
So, before we get into our next set here, a word about the fortepiano. How's it holding up?
It's doing fine. Of course, you know, we brought it in this morning, right, in the rain, right, and the tremendous humidity in Madison today, and got it into the more air-conditioned environs here at Buck Studio. And Norman Shepherd, who made this forte piano, tuned it a couple times this morning, so knock on wood, it's doing fine. You know, they're not truly meant to travel a lot, but you've got to get out of the house sometimes. So, you know, so I enjoy taking this on the road. It weighs about 150 pounds. It's a double-strung instrument. There's two wires for every hammer, not three like the modern piano. They're much thinner wires than the modern piano, which gives this pitch that lift. And also, very importantly, the action, the hammers are covered with leather. So it's a piece of leather that's hitting the string and not felt, which gives it that little bit of a consonant at the beginning of the sound, which I think in the song repertoire is just wonderful. It really matches what she's doing. So anyway, they've taken this all over the United States and have van, will travel.
Okay, well, so it's behaving.
Yes, it is. Bottom line.
Yeah, bottom line. Good, but if we need to stop and retune at any point, that's what's happening there. Well, we're going to stay with the Germans, as promised, for a while. And you have a composer now who, perhaps more than any other, perhaps at times even contrary to his own wishes, was thought of as a song composer. I mean, he wrote symphonies, wrote big pieces, many of which
he
were
wrote
not,
over 600 songs.
Yeah, and the songs was what Franz Schubert was known for, and for with good reason. Yeah. Fantastic songwriter.
Absolutely. So we're going to start with two songs by Schubert and then revisit him again later. But the first is Zuleika 1. He also said a Zuleika 2, but this is the first. And Zuleika is a female character in the Westöstlicher Divan by Marianne von Willemer. And she is in love with a traveler. And this represents the German fascination with the East and Orientalism and exoticism. So she talks about the West wind and it's very evocative of another land. Mm-hmm. So she's singing about Atem, this traveler that she has fallen in love with. The second piece is Nacht und Träume, which is a meditative piece about night and dreams.
Can't go wrong with that.
No.
Two by Franz Schubert.
I imagine this opening riff in the fortepiano is the wind. Right.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
It's the zephyr.
Das Leben wird mir nur aus seinem Mund.
Those Schubertian modulations are kind of irresistible, aren't they?
Wow.
He does that time and again, and it works every time.
I know.
It's great stuff.
Considering he probably wrote that song in about a half an hour.
Which, yeah, he has it. Well, yeah, if you're going to write 600 of them by the time you're 30, I guess you have to be pretty fast, don't you?
Oh, yeah. He was probably an automatic writer or a virtual medium.
So a real conduit. How did you first discover Schubert, Elisa? Do you remember?
Oh, well, I think Schubert Lieder, because there are so many songs and they require a lot of technical skill, especially breath control, I think a lot of young singers start singing Schubert. I studied the two songs we just performed when I was probably a junior in college. And I remember them being so difficult, and they still are, but they're much easier now. But I remember my teacher giving them to me and just thinking, my goodness, these are really fascinating songs and so much history behind them. And I think Schubert is really unmatched in his ability to write really memorable melodies.
Yes.
and really integral piano parts as well.
Well, yeah, he was quite the piano composer also.
Oh, yeah.
Witness those forward-looking sonatas that he wrote that also lay, I think, pretty much in obscurity for a long time.
I'm probably misquoting a little bit, but Brahms, who loved Schubert and respected him, and of course, several generations later, he said, Schubert could write things in 10 minutes that will take me 10 years, you know, something like that.
Sure.
But it's the sense of the outpouring of the melody is so strong, and the melodies, they stick with you forever.
Absolutely.
So what was the context, you suppose, for the performance of these Schubert songs?
They're almost all house music, right? So Schubert is writing, in his little kind of theater underground. They're poets, actors, musicians, all living on a shoestring, and they would just have these what we now call Schubertias, but evening gatherings with poetry and you know, all sorts of music. And one account said that it would get so emotional, everyone would be crying, and then they would have to eat and regroup, and then they'd go at it again, you know. It is.
It's so painful. I can't wait for it to continue.
Right, Probably a little bit. Greenwich Village in the 1950s, like that, you know? The jazz scene in the 50s and 40s, that kind of a thing.
Wonderful intensity to that. And now back to the Germans for a while. And Elisa Jordheim and the sound of the fortepiano. So now, I would say, not something completely different, but we were talking about this, two German composers who, had they even lived in the same time, would have had very little to say to each other, would not have had a lot in common.
Yeah. The first song is Das verlassene Mägdlein, which means The Forsaken Maiden, by Hugo Wolf. And I usually think of Wolf as being a rather operatic song composer, but this song is quite different. The character sings about her loneliness. It's very early in the morning. She has been abandoned. And I think Wolf brilliantly sets us up for that character with the very stark melancholy that is in the piano accompaniment.
And so this would take us into the late 19th century for an interlude of this Forsaken Maiden.
Yes. And then after that, we're going to perform Gretchen am Spinnrade, excuse me. And that was written, I believe, in 1814. And by many is considered the birth of the German Lied.
It's very famous.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what really sets it apart is the again, the piano part that represents the spinning wheel that Gretchen is working at. And you can tell a lot of what's happening in her psyche by listening to that piano accompaniment. She stops and starts. She says a lot of the same words again, but the piano really reveals a lot.
Is Gretchen forsaken also?
Yes.
This is the Forsaken series, right? By Faust. Gretchen has been left by Faust.
She's
trying to work the next day. She's at her desk at the spinning wheel trying to work and yet cannot.
Blame it on Goethe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so two songs, one by Hugo Wolf and the other by Franz Schubert.
Oh,
Well, those Forsaken Maidens do make great music, don't they?
Sure do.
That was Gretchen am Spinnrade by Schubert, and before that, Das Verlassene Mägdlein by Hugo Wolf. And great stuff for the soprano and the fortepiano, too. And we'll be back with Elisa Jordheim and Trevor Stevenson, and I'll repeat our 12:30 quiz question, too, all of that after this, here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hello, I'm Razia Iqbal from BBC NewsHour. Each day we bring you the latest international news and the very best interviews and reports from across the globe, harnessing the worldwide resources of the BBC. Always probing and always quizzical, we ask the tough questions to help you make sense of an increasingly interconnected world. That's NewsHour every day from the BBC.
Support for WPR comes from Wasco Windows, a Wisconsin-based manufacturer of doors and windows using Rehau Ganeo profiles from Germany for passive and low-energy houses. Wasco is online at wascowindows.com. Support also comes from H.J. Pertzborn Plumbing and Fire Protection, your family plumber, dedicated to providing quality service, proudly serving Dane County and surrounding areas for 87 years. More at hjpertzborn.com.
Here's our quiz question again. This given name persists in audio communication because it begins with the same letter as the word received. What name is that? If you can come up with it in the next 18 minutes, you might win a nice prize today. Email your answer to us at midday@wpr.org, or you can phone 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Ramona, and we'll see who wins the prize from among all those who get it right. And now back to Elisa Jordheim and Trevor Stevenson at the fortepiano, and we are going to stay Germanic, but not German. We're going to go north.
Exactly, yeah. So we're going to sing two songs by Edvard Grieg. And my family heritage is Norwegian and Danish. And I had the opportunity to study on a Fulbright grant in 2013-14 in Oslo. But I also traveled to Stockholm and Copenhagen and studied how to pronounce Swedish, Danish, and Norwegian in song. It was fascinating. It was wonderful to meet some relatives of mine that I've never met before and to see where my ancestors lived.
Wow. And were these ancestors, are these relatives of yours, ones who had tracked those family members who had gone to the United States?
Well, so these ancestors that, yes, my great-great-grandparents immigrated to North Dakota, of all places.
They liked it there, didn't
yeah.
they? All those Scandinavians.
Right, yes. But my family, they were farmers. Jordheim is my last name, how it's actually pronounced, means earth home. So they were living in Hemsedal, which is a central region of Norway, which looks like Aspen, Colorado. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really conducive to what they were growing, so they decided to move to North Dakota, and a very different landscape, but I think they had more success with their business. But the music from Scandinavia is just so rich, and it is Germanic, but there's something really different about it. There's something Nordic about it. There's a stoicism to the music that I think is just really... It's really hard to describe, but when you hear it, you can just tell that there's some restraint there.
Yes, well, the Scandinavians are known for restraint, aren't they?
Yes. So we're first going to perform An Svane, meaning a swan. And my grandparents actually brought the sheet music for this song back for me when I was about 20. And that really sparked my interest in the Scandinavian literature. And the swan is really prevalent in Scandinavian poetry. It represents a lot of different things.
Well, look at your Hans Christian Andersen,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Ugly ducklings turning into swans and that kind of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so swans migrate. They leave the harsh winter, which is also very characteristic of the Scandinavian landscape. And this swan has been fickle in this text. The swan also dies, sings its swan song, if you will. So it's a very sad song, but it also, the harmonies are just so complex yet simple. It's really hard to describe, so we'll do it for you, and then you can see what you think. The second piece, I Rosentiden, was originally written in German, but I'll be singing it in a Norwegian translation, and similar to the other Germanic repertoire that we've been doing, talks about love that has turned sour. The lover has left. The protagonist is abandoned.
Right. And the roses in the second song are they dropping the roses, or are they dying?
Well, the time of roses, I think it represents, you know, how short-lived love can be.
Okay.
Perhaps. Mm-hmm.
Two songs by Grieg.
In vita sola düstere, düstere Wergen slagen der Trille Lot Beskytten alfen som sover Alt luten og glede hen over Men siste møte da ere øyne Var lønne og løgne Ja da, da lød din bana du sång I döden du var dagen svan en svan
by Grieg. Yes, it's, it touched your heart there, the
right
swan.
Through the heart,
I want to say the forsaken swan. That would just really intensify it.
Yeah.
And then in Rose time.
Mm-hmm. In Rosentiden.
Well, are we ready for something French then?
Absolutely, yes. We're going to perform Les Chemins de l'Amour, which is by Poulenc. And he wrote it for a French pop singer named Yvonne Printemps. So it has a very cafe-type feel to it. The Pathways of Love is the translation of the title. So it talks about trying to find one's way back to love and how difficult, if not impossible, that can be.
Sounds like
very
a chipper
nice.
One to me.
Yeah.
Chemin de l'amour, those pathways to love by Francis Poulenc. And kind of for a minute there when you're going into the waltz tempo there, Trevor, I wanted to get you like a candelabrum or something.
Right, and an accordion.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. The accordion.
Really need the accordion.
Yeah, so just the distant sounds of the Seine, you know, flowing in the background. Right. It certainly is evocative, isn't it? Elisa, is it at all tricky for you to sort of rethink as you go from one style of song to another? We've gone from opera to, you know, what would be called art song or house music, and then cabaret.
Yeah, it is a different mindset. The vocal technique stays the same, but the style is very different. I would say you also have to make a shift when you're singing in a different language as well. So switching from German to French, I think, okay, well, now I have these nasal sounds that I have to use. Mm-hmm. So it's just sort of a switch that I think becomes easier as you sing more and more different kinds of repertoire, which is why I think versatility is so important for singers. And we don't really have a ton of musical theater repertoire represented today, but we do have I Hate Music by Bernstein. And so that is yet another stylistic change that singers need to be able to do. And it's just simply a change in the resonance, in the style, and in the delivery.
Yeah, I was going to say even the way you would
pronounce certain things and words.
That and the way you'd relate to the audience. I mean, if it's a theater song, you don't necessarily want to over pronounce.
Or roll your R's.
Yeah,
or something.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's almost kind of acting as you go from one style
absolutely,
to the next.
Absolutely. Yep. Putting on a different hat, as it were.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this then would be the theater. The
yes,
theater
this
sound.
Is I Hate Music
Physical
from
theater.
Bernstein's song cycle by the same name. It's the third song in the group of five. It's listed as being a cycle of kids' songs, not necessarily to be sung by kids, but the texts written by Bernstein himself are from a very childlike perspective. So I think this song is it's very I learned it when I was a kid myself.
Oh, really?
And so I feel like, you know, I hate music, but I like to sing. It's very humorous in a childlike sort of way.
And then he identifies music as the very stiff concert hall type of music.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's
yes.
I mean, that's where, you yes. know, he kind of beats up that scene a little bit,
yes.
right?
Right,
the,
yes.
the tucks and tails and, the, you know.
Which
you know,
are still very much with us despite that.
Right, you know, sure. And so I think it's looking for what is the inner music, right, of yourself. So.
Yes, without those trappings. Okay, here it is, Leonard Bernstein.
I hate music, but I like to sing. La-di-da-da-di, la-di-da-di. But that's not music, not what I call music. No, sir. Music is a lot of men in a lot of tales making lots of noise like a lot of females. Music is a lot of folks in a big dark hall where they really don't want to be at all, with a lot of chairs and a lot of airs and a lot of furs and diamonds. Music
I hate music, Leonard Bernstein, and I think your point is really well taken, Elisa, that not necessarily for children to sing. That
and
would
underneath
be a very
all tolerant. That patter is really quite sophisticated harmonies.
Right, it is. It's
so it's a great little piece.
So do you remember the first song that you sang at all in public?
Well, you know, the first memory that comes to mind is singing at church. I had just broken my right leg, and there's video evidence of this. I'm in a Norwegian bunad outfit, and I was singing Jeg så glad, which is a Danish-Norwegian Christmas carol. So that's probably the first performance that I can remember singing. I grew up around music. My parents are both musicians, so I sang a lot. But that strikes me as being probably the first recollection of a performance that I have.
How old were you?
I was six.
Six,
yes. Mm-hmm. With a broken leg.
And... Yep, I had a walker and everything. Yep.
And so how did it go? Must have been pretty well.
I think it went pretty well. I've seen the videotape and thought, well, you know. Not bad.
Kid's got talent, right?
Uh-huh, some potential there.
Yeah.
Okay, so you still have that video. That must be fun to get that out every now and then.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. So what's the date in Grant Park again? June
17th? June 17th and 18th. Mm-hmm.
And what are you going to be singing on that occasion?
Michael Torkey's Book of Proverbs.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a contemporary oratorio for baritone and soprano solos and chorus.
And heavy on the saxophones.
Yeah. It's a really interesting orchestration.
Make it a family affair there with the father playing... One of the saxophones?
No, he won't be playing, but I'm sure that he will be in the audience.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being with us here today.
My
for the
pleasure.
Midday. Great collection of things. Elisa Jordheim, and what's the original pronunciation?
Jordheim.
Jordheim. I like that. And at the fortepiano has been Trevor Stevenson.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Having you back.